In the city of Hamilton, 1 in 5 people, or 90,000, live at or below the poverty line. In the province of Ontario, this number rises to 1.6 million. Social assistance rates are insufficient and lead to food insecurity. We know that when people do not have enough money, a healthy diet becomes one of the first things that they are forced to cut from their budget. Today, on the Health Justice Radio Collective, we speak with Denali and Rosalyn about a challenge they undertook to try and bring change to the level of social assistance in Ontario.
Listening to Health Justice Radio Collective on CFMU 93.3.
Hi there, my name is Nikki Bozanoff, and you're listening to the Health Justice Radio Collective. On the board is Eric Brown, and here with me in studio is Rosalyn and Denali. Do you guys want to introduce yourselves?
Sure, I'm Rosalyn Wilson. I'm a first-year medical student at McMaster University.
And I'm Denali Kerr, and I'm also a first-year medical student at McMaster University.
Okay, so last week, you both undertook something rather interesting. Can you tell me about it?
So we did the Do the Math Challenge, which is basically a project that we undertook with a group of other medical students to live for 5 days on the same bag of food that we would get if we were living on social assistance.
So the idea was that because social assistance rates are so low, most of your social assistance disbursement is taken up with your rent. You generally run out of food by the money for food far before the end of the month, so you end up relying on a food bank. So what we got is a bag of food that would be distributed by a food bank that you... It's technically for 3 days. Most people make it last longer than that, up to 5 days or even a week. So our challenge was, can you live on this allotment for 5 days?
So we know that in the province of Ontario, the social assistance for the level of social assistance for a single person is $592 a month. And obviously, for rent in most places in Ontario, your rent would take up a large portion of that. Add in transportation costs, money for clothing, other necessities. Basically, you're left with nothing for food. So can you tell me a bit about what went into that food basket?
So our food basket was mostly non-perishable items. So 2 boxes Kraft dinner, a couple boxes canned soup, a couple cans of soup, a couple cans of vegetables, a loaf of bread,
2 potatoes, 2 very small onions, 2-3 juice boxes, if juice is the right word. It was sugar water with fruit flavor. And you could either get a small jar of peanut butter if you're vegetarian, or 2 small cans of tuna if you were not.
And let's talk about that for 1 second. So, Denali, you had a food restriction. What was that like?
Yeah, so I'm vegetarian, and that's I've been vegetarian for about 7 years now. And that's an ethical choice that I've made about how I want to live my life. And I found actually that I was a little bit better off than the people eating tuna, because I felt like the peanut butter just went further. It was more flavorful, and you could add it. It made balanced out the salty things that were going into the rest of the meals a little bit better. But unfortunately, for most people on social assistance, they don't get to make that choice. That was sort of an accommodation that was made for our medical student group.
And so what did you think before? What did you think you were getting into before you started the challenge?
Well, I honestly thought it would be easier than it ended up being. I thought, wow, I never eat Kraft dinner, and this is going to be such a treat, because, you know, it's kind of a junk food, but it's tasty. I also didn't think that it would be hard to live on the portions, because when you look at the whole box, I mean, it's like, it looks like a substantial amount of food. And I thought it would be a good experience of empathy, just in that I wouldn't be eating what I usually eat, and I wouldn't get to choose what I eat, but I didn't think it would be that hard. I just thought it would be a good thing to do.
Yeah, I thought it would be good for me just to give up, like, buying things outside of home, like, because we all do that. We pick up coffee from Tim Hortons or, you know, a lunch out when we really could have packed a lunch. And so I thought it would just be good for me in a saving money sort of way. But it was much, much more challenging than it was good for me.
Mm-hmm. So do you do the math challenges part of a campaign run by a coalition of Ontario community organizations, and their demand is really that the Ontario government put food in the budget, so that is, allocate enough money for people on social assistance to live with health and dignity. And their most immediate goal is an immediate $100 per month increase in social assistance. And the goals for the challenge are, I guess, to build solidarity for people doing the challenge, to stand in solidarity with people who are living in poverty, to build empathy. And I guess that was particularly important for you all as medical students, and also to raise awareness about the issue. So do you all feel that you accomplished some of those goals?
I think that definitely it helps me build a little bit of empathy to understand some of the challenges that people on social assistance face. In terms of building solidarity, that is definitely a valuable goal, but I don't know that what we did was enough for us to say, yeah, we know what it's like to live on social assistance. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I wasn't worried about where my next rent check is coming from, and I wasn't worried about whether I could afford to turn the heat on. You know, there were a lot of challenges that I was not facing last week, just with this small, simple exercise.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell me about what the experience itself was like? So, what kind of meals were you making for yourself out of those canned goods?
Well, I had two cans of tuna as pretty much my only protein. We should have mentioned you got to have five pantry items, so things that you might have had around your house, whether it was, I think most of us chose milk, maybe butter or margarine to make the craft dinner, coffee, tea. So besides milk, tuna was the main thing of protein. So I made tuna go a long way and ate a lot more tuna than I really ever expected to in my life. So a little bit of tuna in this, a little bit of tuna in that, a tuna rice casserole. I made a really bad potato soup because there wasn't really any vegetables with like potatoes and canned peas. But you kind of ran out of options quickly. There were really only two things that I could actually cook. And then everything else was like creative mixing. Like this time I'll put the canned peas with the Kraft dinner. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did, like, Kraft dinner, green bean casserole, canned carrot and pea fried rice. Mm-hmm.
And how are you feeling after eating this diet for a few days?
Pretty gross. I think we talked about some how we're used to eating a pretty, I would say, an unusually privileged diet, I think, because in addition to being able to afford most of what we want, we're also, I would say, unusually conscious about our diet. We're doing a nutrition unit right now in medical school, so we're thinking about things a lot. So I think just even psychologically, like knowing, reading the back of the package and thinking like, wow, this has so much sodium, or like, wow, this has no nutrients, was hard. But then also I physically felt tired, and a couple people at our reflection time on Thursday mentioned feeling cranky and just not having energy, coming home after a long day and just crashing.
Anything else? Any other feelings? No. So I also did this challenge back in October as part of a different group of McMaster medical students. And certainly I experienced most of what Rosalyn is describing. But another thing that I experienced was the not being able to concentrate really in class, like constantly thinking about food and what I wasn't eating. So what are other things that came up for you guys during the week?
Well, I think you hit it on the head. Last week when we were starting our GI section of our curriculum, it was really hard not to be thinking about food all the time.
Yeah, as we're talking about vitamin deficiencies or things like that, it's like, wow, this diet would be well on the way to a vitamin deficiency or to diabetes or to high cholesterol. Maybe not high cholesterol, but yeah, possibly high cholesterol, depending on what else you're eating on the side.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know that individuals living in a food insufficient household in Canada are more likely to report heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure. We also know that there's higher rates of chronic disease and poor health in social assistance recipients in Ontario compared with the non-poor. So, I mean, really, there are quite real health impacts to eating this diet on a long-term basis.
Absolutely. I definitely found that I, in addition to not having energy, as much energy as usual. I just could not exercise. It was not possible to get out there and do that while you're on this diet.
Mm-hmm. And some other things that people mentioned in reflecting were difficulty in planning their meals. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, that was one thing that a lot of us noticed. Having sort of long days and planning ahead, taking a lunch or dinner with you, it was a lot harder to do that on this diet. You couldn't just have a little snack with you. And you couldn't pick anything up. If you woke up late and didn't have time to pack a lunch, you couldn't pick up a coffee or a snack like Denali mentioned earlier. And it was especially hard for some of the people in our program who are clerks in their second or third year, where they're doing long hours in the ER or in the operating room and just didn't have that flexibility. And so it made me think a lot about how hard that would be if you had to really structure your life around whether you'd be able to have that little Tupperware of microwavable Kraft dinner, if you even have a microwave, you know, cold Kraft dinner.
Or if you have a job that doesn't allow a break, which a lot of our clerks didn't, and a lot of people on social assistance may not as well.
Mm-hmm. So this food is really structured in a way that it's not convenient, or it doesn't fit into what, as students, we would typically choose, both in terms of time. You know, we would never think of warming up a can of soup at school. That's just not in the cards.
Well, it's ironic because it is all convenience food. It was very quick to prepare a lot of it. But it's not convenient for anyone who is working, actually, who's like out in the community doing things. It's maybe convenient if you have an oven and you're living at home and you're just focused on like keeping yourself alive, but not for a lot not for a lot beyond that.
And I think that one other thing that I really noticed is just the privilege that we have of, as medical students and as students in general, just attending so many events where food is provided, and you really notice it when you're at an event and there's this big platter of food and you can't eat it.
Absolutely, yeah. I was struck by how many times throughout the week I had to say, oh, well, I can't. And how generous people are, too, where people will just offer you snacks or fruit to share, and you just, it denies you sort of a certain level of socializing to not be able to share with those people.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk more about the reflections from this challenge after we go to a song by Zeus called River by the Garden. Here we go.
Diamond mines are closed and the forest knows it's old. I have walked through the river by the garden. Nothing there to see other than the trees. I have walked through the river by the garden. I have walked through the river by the garden. She found another man. She don't know how badly she has hurt me. Well, I could hurt her too if I wanted to. She don't know how badly I could hurt her. My heart keeps breaking every morning. In the river by the garden. When she turned her back, that's when I had my chance. Yeah, I left a mark in the river by the garden. Yeah, in that river by the garden. My heart keeps breaking every morning. Keep
Okay, we're back in studio. That was Zeus. My name is Nikki Bosnoff. On the board is Eric Brown. And in with me in studio are two fellow medical students, Rosalyn and Denali. Thanks for being here, guys.
Mm-hmm. Happy to be here.
So we were just talking about a challenge that the two undertook last week. And the challenge was to eat the diet that someone living on social assistance might receive from a food bank. So on Thursday, you reflected with other medical students who undertook the challenge. And what were some reactions that people spoke about that they received from other people?
Well, we heard from some pretty negative reactions from people that were working in the hospitals, actually, who had comments like, well, people on social assistance live better than you and I. And why would you put yourself through that, this, when they would see this person come in with their Kraft dinner or their canned soup or whatever? Why would you put yourself through that for people that aren't even living as bad as you are this week?
Right, or saying that people on social assistance only eat that way because they spend all their money on booze and cigarettes.
Mm-hmm. So it was interesting. I was also at this reflection session, and there were two people present who were from the 25 in 5 campaign here in Hamilton, and these were two individuals who have had personal experiences living on social assistance, and I think they brought up some very interesting points. Do you want to talk about those?
Yeah, I thought that Tim brought up a really interesting point in that the face that we put on poverty is not actually the face of poverty. You know, we see certain people on the streets engaged in activities that we stigmatize, and we stereotype and say, oh, that must be what it means to be on social assistance. I think it's really easy, too, to do this in our clinical placements. You know, when you see that one person you see who seems to be applying for disability and it seems sort of unfair, and that can color your impression of what it means to be on disability or social assistance, and leave you thinking about that one person all day, when in fact you maybe saw four people who are seriously ill, need disability desperately, and don't necessarily want it because they want to be working. It's just interesting how we can so easily have that one negative view or that one negative interaction and extrapolate it and apply that to a larger group of people.
Mm-hmm. And I think another interesting thing we've had to think a lot about during this past week is about choices and about, you know, some people do make bad choices, but that's true in every social class, you know. We don't penalize or look down on the businessman who has high cholesterol, has a very poor diet, doesn't exercise, and will probably end up costing our healthcare system huge amounts later on in risk of cardiovascular disease, etc. So, you know, we're very judgmental of people of the lower class who fall beholden to alcoholism and addictions of smoking, but you know, if we were to apply the same analysis to people of a higher socioeconomic class, I think we'd have a lot of questions to ask of ourselves.
Right. It's not so much criminalization of behaviors, but criminalization of poverty itself.
Another thing that one of the participants mentioned is that on the current social assistance levels, it would really be hard to spend much of it on booze and cigarettes if you were paying rent, for example. Just to survive, you would have to take, it would take some pretty creative booze acquisition methods, I guess.
Uh-huh. So I think that the focus of the challenge this past week has really been on food, but you both have probably learned a lot more about social assistance than just the food aspect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was actually left asking a lot of questions by the time we went to the reflection, thinking about the food that I'd eaten and thinking about the fact that a lot of people who have the means don't eat much better than that. And there's sort of a broader food culture problem, I'd say, in North America, where a lot of the food that we see for sale is crappy. A lot of us don't know how to cook with fresh and whole grains, and we sort of lost the sense of being able to feed ourselves in a healthy way. But when I got to the reflection session and heard from the stories of people living on social assistance, I was kind of like, regardless of what choices people make with the money they have for food, there just isn't enough. Like, it's just ridiculous. And there's so many other issues that are making life difficult for these people. And it was hard enough to live on this diet for 5 days without any of the other stressors, without having to worry about how to pay rent, without having to worry about transportation, without having to worry about feeding and taking care of any kids that I might have. It just gave me, I think, a little more empathy for what it's like. Like, man, if it's so hard for me in this situation to live like this, it's ridiculous to think that someone could live on $590 a month and not have severe health problems, anxiety problems. I mean, just ridiculous.
Absolutely. I think the challenge was great in that it really forced you to examine your own privilege and see how blessed and lucky we are, even with, you know, facing that little bit of food insecurity. That's not really such a big challenge when it's not lumped in with all the other types of insecurity that people on social assistance are facing.
Mm-hmm. As I heard someone bring up at the earlier McMaster Challenge, people on social assistance really have their plate full in a figurative sense, even though literally they don't have much on their plate.
Right.
So we only have a few minutes left. Do you have any reflections going forward about what actions you think need to be taken?
I think it is really absolutely vital that the social assistant allotment be increased to, like you said, literally put food in the budget. And unfortunately, they've decided to go through this 18-month review process of the policy. So it looks like in time for the next elections, this is not going to be an election issue. But I think we do all have a responsibility to contact our local legislators and talk to them about how much of an issue this is for us.
And I would encourage anyone listening in the Ontario area, if you are intrigued by this, to just try it and experience it for a week. I think that even the empathy of having a little bit of that experience is helpful, because I think often we want to believe that people who are in social assistance spend all their money on booze and cigarettes because it makes it easier. It's hard to think about people living on so little a month that are really just trying to like make it day by day. And actually having that experience gives us a little more motivation and a little more empathy just when we're, as healthcare people in the healthcare system, when we're meeting with a patient, as one of our as one of the people with experience living on social assistance said, well, now you know when you see a patient, you don't need to ask them, do they have a headache? Because they probably have chronic headaches because they're not eating enough. It's like, wow.
Mm-hmm. So I think moving forward, as our group of medical students, we're going to be writing a letter to the president of the Ontario Medical Association, because in examining our privilege, we've also realized that med students and people in the medical profession also have a privilege in that we're able to witness these things and also take action on that. So we look forward to reflecting more on the experience and sharing more about it. If there's one thing that you had to say that you're taking forward from this experience, what would it be?
Well, this sounds really obvious, but being poor is really hard. Again, really obvious, but it just struck me again in a new way.
Absolutely, and just the importance of having empathy for what other people are experiencing and recognizing that you can never fully be in their shoes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you so much for being here today, Rosalyn and Denali, and thanks for sharing your experiences.
It was good to be here.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right, that's all we've got for today on the Health Justice Radio Collective. Thanks for listening. My name is Nikki Bosanoff, and on the board was Eric Brown. We'll catch you next week.